This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you could join us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Hey, a really good feel-good story that just hit. Former Washington Redskin lineman Mark May, you may remember him on ESPN talking college football, he had lost two Super Bowl rings in Arizona earlier this year. He was at a charity event, and he had his two rings from the Super Bowl championships that he won while with Washington. And those two rings and a watch were missing. And so he called the hotel, and the story continues that they had the rings and the watch, but they gave it to the engineer of the hotel. They never told May, and that engineer then went to Las Vegas from Arizona to try to pawn the two rings at the store that Pawn Stars, the television show Pawn Stars, is known for, the gold and silver pawn in Las Vegas. The guy who was the manager there felt like something was up, felt like something was amiss. The guy wanted $12,000 for both of the Super Bowl championship rings, realizing his business, right, that some people just want money as quickly as they possibly can. He said, all right, let me think it over, and he offered a lower amount of money. The guy immediately accepted. He called the police. They arranged for him to come back thinking he was going to close the deal, and he was arrested. They were able to get the rings back to Mark May. Pretty interesting story that it kind of combines a couple of things, but the inside workings of a pawn dealer, who knew? But, you know, I always hear stories of former Super Bowl athletes that have to sell their, Super Bowl rings to pawn shops because, they're down on their luck or they need money for something. And I always say, man, I know we have, we have a lot of people in this country that we should do charitable work for. There's a lot of really down and out people. But if you know that there's a football player that has to sell his Super Bowl ring and you've got the means, buy the ring back and give it to him. It's kind of sad when they have to go down, when they're down on their luck so much that they have to part ways with something that's so personal to them. And again, I know a lot of people are hurting. There's a lot of charities out there, but it always touches my heart when a former football player is just down on their luck at their older age and they have to pawn a Super Bowl ring. It shouldn't happen. SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. I'm thinking, 1982, is this Toto?
Yes, it is.
All right. I love playing Name That Tune. I do, on Throwback Thursday. It's one of my favorite things to do. We're going back to Tom Watson, who won the British Open on this date in 1982. We celebrate British Open champions. So apparently July 18th is a pretty good date for British Open champions. Tom Watson, Greg Norman, Louis Oosthuizen, who was the list? There was Seve Ballesteros, Greg Norman twice, Paul Laurie, Todd Hamilton. 1999, yeah, Paul Laurie. Yeah. So yeah, one of the good ones. Yeah.
Seven.
Greg Norman, the second one Greg Norman won in 93. You know Rick Riley, the author? He's worked for Sports Illustrated all those years?
Yes.
Rick Riley used to write a lot of golf, and he would cover the majors for Sports Illustrated. He was he's a really great writer, but he's a very good golf writer. And he sometimes lines stay with you. Like, you read something in a magazine, the way it's someone is poetically describing something. And the golf that day in the final round, and that was at Royal St. George's, was so good, right? It was really great golf. And Norman beat out a lot of players that were playing at a high level on that Sunday. And Riley wrote, because at the time there was clouds and it was cloudy and weather had kind of affected, but then the clouds kind of parted and it was like bright and it was sunny and blue skies. And Riley wrote that the golf was so good, even God wanted to watch it. That's why the clouds had broken. And it was just a really good line to sort of describe that day when it was just like real excellence out on the golf course, and Norman won the British Open. So that's pretty good writing, especially when something hits you like that, like years and years later. So, all right, 800-777-2907 is the number on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Some NBA news. It appears, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, that Chris Paul is not going to be moving on from the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder had been working to deal him out of Oklahoma City, possibly to the Miami Heat, but it now appears that Chris Paul is likely to stay with the Thunder because there haven't been any takers. No wonder he's going to be due $40 million. On the contract. Nobody wants that albatross around their neck right now. But if you're OKC, this was kind of what you wanted to do with Chris Paul once you traded Russell Westbrook away. You weren't trying to trade, you know, Russell Westbrook for a lesser guard or somebody that was more injury prone just because. You were looking to send Paul out to sort of say, well, we'll even build up more assets. I mean, there's rebuilding, and then there's like stripping it down to the bare bones and rebuilding. And that's what the Thunder wanted to do. This is going to be a weird season for Paul because, again, he's getting older. He's at 34 years old now. He desperately wants to win a championship. The window is not only closing, it's closing really hard on him because he's got such a hard contract to absorb for anybody. Now, I do think in the end there'll probably be a taker that will be willing to think that Paul could be a real asset to them down the road. So it's going to be interesting to see Paul playing with a Thunder team in which two things are going to happen. One, the Thunder are going to grow, build, you know, they're going to lose a lot of games, but the goal is, hey, we're going to build this up with draft. But also to see Paul try to play in a way to show tremendous value to somebody that may be interested in his services when the time comes. Right? That he's not just going to throw in the towel and go, well, this is a waste of my time. He's got to go out there and put up some numbers and look good and look healthy, because even though his contract is heavy, somebody that's pursuing a championship and needs a guy like him as a missing piece, he may be a piece that's available via trade where everybody else is not going to part ways with that kind of talent. So Paul could have a really, really good year up until the trade deadline, until somebody says, yeah, well, he's playing great, and we'd like that greatness on our team. And since nobody else on his level is available via trade, we'll talk. That means we'll take the contract. That means we'll work out something. So the Thunder rebuild, Paul gets a chance to at least make an attempt to be on a team that's pushing towards a postseason run. And in the end, the Thunder gets, rebuild. But if you were looking for the jettison Chris Paul out of here as quickly as possible from the Oklahoma City Thunder, that doesn't look like it's going to happen. He's looked like he's going to stay put. The guy I think, and I brought this up a few days ago, the guy I think I'm watching closely is Billy Donovan. Does Billy Donovan want to be a part of a rebuilding Oklahoma City Thunder program? Does Billy Donovan, who's a two-time NCAA champion, who can coach at the NBA level and can coach at the NCAA level, want to sit through this for the next few years? I mean, what do you do? What's your job? Your job is to try to win games, I guess, but in the end, what is it? Is it to grow talent that may or may not help you down the road? You may not be keeping down the road? I mean, I guess the job is to obviously put a competitive product on the floor. That's job one, right? Because in the end, you have to have integrity. You have to protect the field. If you're Oklahoma City, like all these teams that tank, this is one of the reasons I hate tanking. Because I get it as a strategy, and it's a great way to sort of get yourself in position to be great by getting a top draft pick. But the thing that I hate most about tanking is that you have to protect the field. That's a term they use in golf a lot, right? In protecting the field, if you and I are playing golf, Gio, and I'm out of a tournament and you're leading a tournament, and I see that there's something wrong with the way you address the ball or you grounded your club, I have an obligation to report that, even if it doesn't affect me, even if I'm way out of the tournament, because I have to protect the other guys that are in the field that are competing against you to try to win the tournament. That's why I got to call you out for penalties. So protecting the field here, like, that's why tanking stinks, because if you're vying for position in the playoffs, or you're trying to make a playoffs, right? And you're competing against another team, and that team is playing one of the tanking teams late, you don't get a fair shake at trying to get a spot into the postseason. You know, you're vying for that eighth spot. You got another team that's vying for that eighth spot. They get to play a team that's openly tanking, and you have to play Golden State. You know, it's you you want to put a competitive product on the field. This is why owners, especially owners, really don't want to admit to tanking because they know it does devalue their product. Now, they may authorize it, and they may actually like doing it, knowing that the benefits far outweigh the criticism. Now, if you're a commissioner, you could never admit to tanking in a way. Like, you could never admit that it's willfully going on, even though you know it might be a problem. Because then again, your product takes a hit. It's really interesting, the business of these leagues, right? They can survive a lot of things. They can survive their players doing a lot of things, right? Drugs, criminal. They can go to jail and even come back and play. But one of the things the leagues have real trouble with is when a player, through either gambling or tanking games on purpose or whatever, takes the credibility of the league and takes it down the toilet. They have a hard time with that because, again, when you buy a ticket, you're supposed to be buying a ticket to a square game, a square sporting event that is not being any outside influence is penetrating the actual play of the game to determine the outcome. That these games aren't decided ahead of time, the points aren't decided ahead of time, anything like that. And that's why tanking is a problem. That's one of the reasons why they didn't reward teams who are really stinking it up during the season with a better chance of the draft. Because they don't want to reward that. Try to keep a competitive balance. But if you're Billy Donovan, you've got two championships at Florida. You know you can go right back into this league. You go right back into college basketball and win immediately. I mean, you can win almost right away in some of these programs. Or at least not, within a couple of years when you start recruiting again. But does he stick it out? Does he say, all right, I'll be part of this. Wherever this is going in the next 3, 4, 5 years, I'll be a part of it too. We'll see. But I don't know if I would want to waste my time like that, of knowing I had plenty of options. And it's not like he can't come back to the NBA. But to get to that team that has Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, lose Durant, pick up Paul George, now lose Paul George, then lose Russell Westbrook, you got to be shaking your head in your office. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, as we continue. We'll get a Big 12 Oklahoma preview coming up. They just had Media Days just earlier this week. One of the interesting things about Media Days was, Lincoln Riley, hey, we're not giving Jalen Hurts this job just yet. Jason Kersey is going to join us, and we'll talk to him about things that are brewing in the Big 12 Conference that's coming up on SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. This is from Top Gun. Is this Kenny Loggins?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Danger Zone? I think I played this in band. When I played the trumpet back in like 8th grade.
Oh, you did a trumpet solo on the Danger Zone?
No. We played this in band. I played the trumpet, but I was a terrible trumpet player. I was third chair, which means you don't get to play the good stuff when the trumpets. You get to play, like, the beat. So everybody else would be like, and I'm like,
oh, the simple that's stuff.
That's the third chair. That's what I got to do.
You got an important job, sir.
You know what, though? Here's the deal. It wasn't... I should have been better. This is one of the things I regret. I always tell my kids things I regret. Like, I was like, man, when I was a kid, I did this, or I was a class goof-off, and I shouldn't have been a class goof-off. I'm not a musician by any means, but I liked playing a musical instrument because I wanted to be well-rounded, right? I wanted to learn a foreign language. I wanted to learn an instrument. I didn't have to be good at it. I just wanted to expand my horizons a little bit, right? But I never practiced. I never brought that trumpet home. I never practiced. I didn't want to practice. I didn't have a passion for it. And if I just put a little work into it, I would have been better. I would have been better at it. Not great, because I'm not musically gifted by any means. But literally, that thing, I only took it home on weekends because they would check the lockers to make sure you took it home on the weekends. And then it would sit, and then I would bring it back on Monday. And I never took it out. Mm-hmm. I just left it in the case. And then I would, I would only practice when it came to finals. Like you'd have to perform some piece for your final. So I'd practice that. But
could have been the next Louis Armstrong.
Oh yes, or the Chuck Mangione. You know, who would have thought? Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. We're close, convenient, known for our guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I keep bringing this up, and only because it is still worth the attention. And I feel like this might be a running bit throughout the summer. I am still blown away at some of the numbers that Major League Baseball is continuing to produce on a night-in and night-out basis when it comes to home runs. The Oakland A's, for example, hit 10 home runs last night en route to a 10-2 win against Seattle. The Diamondbacks had 21 hits in their game. They had Eduardo Escobar hit 2 home runs in their 19-4 victory over the Texas Rangers. Right, the Astros, they put up 11 on the Angels last night. I mean, San Francisco scored 40 runs in a 4-game series against the Rockies in Colorado. I know, high altitude, I get it. But still, I mean, the numbers out there are just crazy. The Mets last night, Pete Alonso hit a monster home run. The Mets beat the Twins 14-4. You like offense, baseball's providing the offense. And I don't know which is which. I'm glad Justin Verlander said what he said before the All-Star break. I really am. Because it does make me look at that stuff a lot differently. You know, it's one thing to just go, oh, it looks like scoring's up. Oh, it looks like home runs are up. Maybe it's just one of those crazy years. Maybe the pitching isn't all that good. But then Verlander, and he doesn't have to do much with it. He just has to go, yeah, the balls are getting off. And then all of a sudden you notice every night. Like, you start looking at this statistically and you're like, wait a minute. They had how many home runs? How many people got 2 in one game? You know, it's eye opening, and it does make you think that maybe it's the case. Now, listen, I don't have a problem with it. I think that baseball, if they're doing that, if they are making the ball fly out of ballparks easier, it does mess with statistics. It does affect the history of the game, how we view the game. And if Verlander is correct, there is something troubling about that, given that numbers are sacred. And we don't want the numbers to be changed that much, right? We want to feel like every era is being thought at in the same way. That Ruth's numbers are the same as Mantle's numbers, which are the same as Pete Rose's numbers, which are the same as Mark McGuire's numbers, regardless of steroids. I mean, name your guy. We want to think that each era is all equal, even though we know training is different, ballparks are different, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But we want to feel, because numbers are very sacred in baseball. But if this is going on and they're willing to play around with that, with this baseball, they're doing it for the reason that I've been saying for a long time. You cannot lose the generation that is here now, the young generation. You cannot lose them to a sport they will never, ever come back to. You know, it's when the NFL was going through its national anthem crisis, you had a lot of people say, I'm never watching the NFL again. Never. But that's leaving the sport and maybe coming back if the NFL were to do something about that issue that you liked. If they were to make amends in the way that wasn't handled the way you thought it was, you would come back. It is very difficult when you're a youngster and baseball isn't on your radar and you don't have any interest in the game. It is very, very difficult to become a season ticket holder or somebody that buys 10 to 15 games a year in whatever market you live in. It's hard to do. Now, you can get caught up in the winning. They expect everybody to get caught up in the winning. That's not the problem. The problem is what if your team goes 10 games below 500? They still want you to be vested in the franchise. And if a generation grows up and has disposable income, and they're not willing to put that disposable income into baseball because the sport lost them as kids, that becomes a problem. So if they're making the game more exciting, one of the reasons is don't lose a generation, because they're not coming back as a whole. yeah, you might get a few people. Look, if you live in an area like, let's say you live in Mississippi, and you've never been around Major League Baseball, you don't have any interest in Major League Baseball, you don't follow Major League Baseball, but then you move, you know, you get older and you move to Houston, you might become an Astros fan. They're winning, the ballpark's nice, you might become an Astros fan. But collectively, that generation isn't going to turn to Major League Baseball. My son played Little League. He doesn't have a favorite team. He doesn't follow the sport. He likes football, but he doesn't follow baseball. That's what they're trying to, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get this game to be exciting enough so that the young people go, yeah, I'll give it a try. I'll give it a whirl. My dad liked it. My grandfather liked it. So I guess I'll like it. But, you know, if that's the big scare with all these leagues. We always talk about how the NFL is king. The NFL is king, and it's hard to kill a king. But don't think it can't happen in the NFL. Don't think the NFL is too big to fail. College football is struggling with attendance. That's one of the big stories. Has attendance gone down so significantly that it is noticeable in the college football ranks? Now, I always say it's the college football is very local. So, you know, when your program's winning, even if it's not winning national championship level, when it's winning, it tends to draw in a lot of people. It's very local. We look at it nationally, but it is a very local thing. But at the same time, and again, go back, it's the same time. Baseball attendance is down. It feels like interest is down. This is a way you bring it back up again. Oklahoma and the Big 12 recently had media days. One of the big stories, at least I thought, was that Jalen Hurts being not named the starting quarterback by Lincoln Riley, so Riley can do a very cliched coach speak about how Hurts, who's transferring in from Alabama, has to earn that job. On the one hand, I completely respect Lincoln Riley for doing that. You want the kids, especially at this age and is growing and growing into possibly a professional career, to know that they have to continue to work and earn everything that is given to them. But on the other hand, Jalen Hurts was voted the newcomer of the year in the Big 12 before he even took a snap. And he didn't go to media days because right now he's not the starting quarterback. I know media days is a media thing, and I know we shouldn't read anything into what is said or done at these events, but it's interesting to me. Jalen Hurts could be the superstar of the Big 12. National championship, played in another title game and lost, only had two losses as a starter at Alabama, came off the bench to help Tua, and the Crimson Tide beat Georgia last year in the SEC championship game, even though people urged him to get out of the Crimson Tide program as quick as he could because he wasn't going to play much and he was going to be a backup. He stuck with it, he stayed with it, and he wrote himself a fantastic story. But Lincoln Riley, staying true, knowing, hey, I want this kid to know, hey, you come in Oklahoma, you could be a star, you could be a Heisman Trophy winner, but only because you've earned it first. I like it, but at the same time, it made me go, oh, what's media days for? Bring your quarterback. Promote. You have a chance to have the third straight Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback. That's pretty good, Lincoln Riley. That's pretty good. But we'll also get into the conference itself. We know Oklahoma is good. We know Texas is good. What about the middle of the pack? How competitive is this conference going to be? You know, we know that they can produce a championship team. We know Oklahoma can make the playoff and win a title. We know that Texas could do the same thing if the cards are right. But are they playing on a level here where the middle of the road of the Big 12 is up to the challenge? We'll preview that conference coming up on Twitter at Tony D Radio as we roll along on SB Nation AM.
Make me stay, so take your weight off of me. I know your every move, so won't you?
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's SB Nation Radio Throwback Thursday. Dirty Diana, Michael Jackson, 88.
Correct.
Celebrating Seve Ballesteros winning the British Open. It's been a nice Throwback Thursday today. We're doing British Open champions on this date and the music of their year in which they won. So our list had Tom Watson, Greg Norman, Seve Ballesteros, Norman again, Paul Laurie, Todd Hamilton, Louis Oosthuizen in a variety of different years. It's been fun. Been fun to reminisce about those opens and some of the music that we've had. All right, we're going to try to hook up with Jason Kersey of The Athletic on the Big 12. A conference, again, Oklahoma is going to be your top team. How good is Texas? Is there, you know, come off a season last year? We always say this with teams, especially like, you know, a team that has had some history of being good and then kind of disappeared a little bit and then started to get good again, that are they back? You know, are they back to where they should be? We did this with Tiger after the Masters. He won the Masters. Did it after Eastlake, really, when he won the Tour Championship, right? He's back. He's now back to the level we expect him to be. Well, maybe, but maybe not. You know, maybe it just was a great year or a great tournament or a great game, but doesn't always mean that it plays out the way you want it to play out. But it looks like Texas has everything in place to be back, to be competitive again, to be challenging for the conference title, maybe even possibly getting into the playoff. But what about the middle of the pack? What about the middle of the Big 12? And we're talking about the Baylors of the world and the TCUs. Les Miles is in the conference now, being the head coach at Kansas. So, again, a lot of these different kind of, you know, programs, different teams. Now, how good are they? And that's my big question. We always talk about how deep the SEC is because we know that it's top heavy, but where you get the success of your conference is the middle of the pack. When the middle of the pack can challenge your top teams, when you feel like we went through a landmine and we emerged because the middle teams in our conference are very good, right? That's where you can get a lot of notoriety for your conference. The AAC had this real problem. The American Athletic Conference, it had UCF. Were we sold enough on the Houston Cougars? Were we sold enough on Temple, South Florida, Cincinnati, as real competition, Memphis, as real competition to make a 8-0 conference season and a 12-1 season overall? Was that worthy enough for us to, it was 12-0 going into the bowl game. Was it worthy enough to be national championship good, right? That's the way we judge conferences. Clemson has to go perfect this year because Syracuse is good, but You got to run through the ACC if you're Clemson. You can't lose to even an upstart Florida State, right? Florida State may have taken 90 steps backwards with Willie Taggart in that first year. But even as they build themselves back up to the level that they should be, if you're Clemson, you can't stumble once. Now, if you're Oklahoma, you can stumble against Texas. We saw that. But is West Virginia with Neil Brown going to be a competitive unit enough to start saying, hey, look out for Baylor, look out for TCU, look out for Iowa State, look out for Texas Tech, right? All of those, where is the Big 12? Again, we know the Sooners are good. And with Jalen Hurts, and I don't think they'll miss too much of a beat with Jalen Hurts. I mean, I like Jalen Hurts. Sam Ehlinger, who's been criticized by Terry Bradshaw, has been criticized by Baker Mayfield. I mean, they're coming off a 10-4 season last year, and a year they beat Georgia. But, I mean, you don't have to look at the SEC, for example, right? It's Georgia, it's Florida, and, of course, it's Alabama, right? There was a time in the there was for many years under Mark Richt where Georgia, the preseason would be Georgia, Georgia, Georgia. Look out for the Bulldogs. They've got tremendous talent. They've got, you know, they got Matt Stafford at quarterback back then. They've got all these, you know, solid players. But Georgia had this nasty tendency of losing games that they should win. And that was always the disappointing level of where the Bulldogs would be. They'd be really good, and they could give anybody a fight, and when they were playing on, they were tough to beat. But they had a tendency sometimes to lose to teams they shouldn't have lost to. It just once or twice. And it was just enough to not meet the level of expectations that they had. But it wouldn't be like they would stumble three or four times. They would stumble just enough. And it was just enough because the expectations were so high that Georgia was a disappointment. And I think that could happen to Texas this year. That the expectations are high. Again, coming off a good season last year, 10 win and a win in the Sugar Bowl. What if they stumble to a team they're not really supposed to lose to? Maybe in the conference, right? If they lose to an Oklahoma State team that's not quite good enough. If they get upset by a Kansas State team. If they stumble once, it's going to put a blemish enough on them because the expectations are so high that they'll feel like a disappointment, even though they are climbing out of a hole and getting into relevancy again. And that's the trick. That the trick is how to have a good season when expectations are high, but you still have issues you have to deal with. You know, LSU, I mean, look at Ed Orgeron, for example. By all accounts, LSU last year had a very, very good year, all right? They went 10-3, right? Went 5-3 in a very tough division. They were dealing with a new quarterback in Joe Burrow, who now is going to be better. They had some issues in some areas that they feel like they've gotten better at, but they went 10-3. That's a worthy season in the SEC West without being Alabama. But even at SEC Media Days, Orgeron couldn't come out and say, man, we had a successful campaign last year. We went 10-3. We're really excited to be coming off that season. Kentucky did, but LSU can't. Why? Because LSU at one point in their career, in their lives, won a national title under Nick Saban. But they're a program that has built itself into, we win national championships. We should be competing for national championships. So 10-3 doesn't make, you know, we miss the mark. That's the mentality. Now, if you're Mark Stoops at Kentucky and you win 10 games, that's worthy of praise. If you're Florida in your first year under Dan Mullen after firing Jim McElhain and you win 10 games, even though you've won championships at Florida, it's something really in just like 10, 11 years ago. That is still a good season, worthy of praise because you're building something back. You've got a new coach and you're putting everything into place. But Texas has got this high expectation. If they lose one or two games, I'm wondering how the perception is going to be because we should be going into this year with the Longhorns thinking, yeah, we're not really quite sure yet. I'm not really sure how good they're going to be. Maybe or maybe not. I like what I saw last year. This is enough to build on. They went 7-2 in the conference. They went 10-4 overall. I like what they're building. However, let me see again. Let me see another year before I start anointing this program as back. Played in the title game of the conference. So it's interesting how we viewed certain teams and different teams. You know, look, Alabama can't lose two games. Right? Clemson can't lose one game. But as I mentioned earlier in the show today, South Carolina, my school, has a tough schedule. If they win seven games, I'll be happy. They can't win 10. They're not good enough to win 10. Right? Their schedule is too tough to win 10. They're not on Florida's level. They're not on Georgia's level. They're not on Alabama's level. They're not on Texas A&M's level. So we have different barometers. And that, you know, and I just want to know where we are with Texas. I'm trying to figure out where we are with Texas. So I like Texas a lot, but I am a wait and see kind of guy when it comes to that. All right, again, at Tony D Radio on Twitter is where you can reach us at 800-777-2907. Your thoughts on that and more as we roll along. We'll get to some more NFL news coming up next on SB Nation AM.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. This group, is this Smash Mouth?
Yes.
All right. There's another group that sounded like them from the 90s.
Really?
I can't remember who it was, but they didn't make it as big. But I always get, whenever I hear them, a song, I always think, is that the band I don't remember, or is it actually Smash Mouth? So, there you go. Throwback Thursday. This is from 99?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is, that's your favorite one.
This is my favorite British Open. John Vandeville's epic collapse on 18. By the way, Robert on Twitter, who sends some good stuff, by the way, at Tony D Radio is where you can hit us, sent me another tweet where the average ticket price to home games in college football. I'm blown away by this. I think Robert was too, because he said Michigan in the Big House, capacity 100,000 at $285 per ticket average, hauls in $285 million on a Saturday, because I'm out of touch. I am too. Listen to this. I got to look this up to find out if this is accurate. I don't doubt that it is. Seems to come from a pretty good source. The average ticket to a Georgia home game in Athens is $487. That's $500 a ticket to see Georgia football this year.
That's the only sport in town, though.
Yes and no. It's not bad of a drive to Atlanta.
How much is it?
Like, a couple hours.
A couple hours? Still. Yeah. Like, this is in your backyard.
Right. That's very true. Ohio State, $352. Michigan, $285. Notre Dame, $276. Alabama, $249. That I get. Nebraska, $232. Auburn, $225. That's pretty good.
Nebraska's
Auburn, well done.
$232?
Yeah, $232
for
Nebraska.
$232
for
that?
To go to Nebraska, to go watch Nebraska. LSU, $221. Florida, $218. That's a lot of money.
U of H is
about $50.
Yeah, U of H is like $100. $50.
Hey, listen. I live in Nashville, and we, for the first couple of years we lived here, we were Vanderbilt season ticket holders, only because my wife and I are both SEC fans, and it's a great way to see SEC football. You weren't, you were getting Vanderbilt, but you would see Ole Miss, you would see Florida, you'd see South Carolina, you would see Tennessee. You could see some of the SEC schools come to town and get to see them, and they were relatively inexpensive. They were good seats, good price for season tickets, but $352 to see Ohio State at the Horseshoe. That's awesome. $285 for the Big House. That's going to set you back some cabbage, man.
Those are historic places to play at, though.
All right, go visit. $100 a ticket seems reasonable to me. A good, for some entertainment, that seems reasonable to me. My wife wanted to see Carrie Underwood in concert here in Nashville. I got her two good tickets for her birthday for about a little over $100 a piece. Right? So that seems reasonable. She's going to put on a couple hours of show. It's a concert. She likes Carrie Underwood. She's going to go with her friend. It's going to go for her birthday. Have a good time. Same thing with sports. Why do we think we want to go to sports for $25? I mean, they're providing 3 hours of entertainment. The game might not be good, but you're at least provided entertainment. It's just $400 to go to a Georgia game is expensive. That's really expensive. That's close to $2,000 for a family of four just to get, and that's the average ticket. So I'm sure you can get some tickets for $100 and some tickets for $1,200. However, the crazy math works. Oh, Michael says Athens is only 45 minutes from Atlanta. See, I said a couple of hours. I was dead wrong, Gio. I was dead wrong. Athens is only 45 minutes from Atlanta. So, it's not the only game in town in Georgia, Gio.
I mean, it's still 45 minutes, man.
Yeah, well, in Atlanta traffic, that might be 2 hours, right? But it's still only 45 minutes as the crow flies.
Exactly. You're not counting into the traffic here, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. For correcting that. Although I did set Geo the wrong way. I did say a couple of hours. I don't know my geography. I say a couple of hours to just to cover the my bases. Right? Could be two. Could be six. I'm good if I say a couple of hours.
Oh, yes. That's what I do. I tell people that I'm going to be there between 2 to 6 hours. 2 to 10 hours.
2 to 10 hours. You say 2 to 10 hours. That's when you'll be there.
I'll head to the party either at 8 p.m. or 2 o'clock in the morning, sometime during that time period.
Yeah. Now I'm wondering, can students sell their student tickets, or do they have to have a student pass to get in with a student ticket? That's the way it was when I was in college.
I have to get a student pass.
You'd get a student ticket, but in order to get into the stadium, you'd show the student ticket, then you'd show your student ID.
Yeah, you still have to show your student ID.
You still have to do that? Yeah. That's too bad, because that's a whole cottage industry right there, man.
Yeah, you could imagine all the college students will be selling their tickets.
Are you kidding me? For $485 a ticket? You got to get crazy.
That's a nice meal instead of ramen.
Am I the only one that is amazed how many college kids go on road trips to these like bowl games? Like way when I was in college, I didn't have the kind of sloppy wealth that I could, you know, go on a road trip to Santa Clara, California to watch my football team play, buy a ticket, stay in a car, rent a car, whatever. Even if I was driving myself and I was eating, you know, McDonald's scraps, I still didn't have that kind of crazy wealth to go do that. I'm always amazed at the amount of college kids that do that. I wish I did that. I wish South Carolina had been good enough to go on a road trip. They were not good when I was going to school there. They were not good at all.
Like if they suck, you don't deserve to drive all the way over there, even back then.
When I graduated college and I finished up at UNH, when I graduated college, my buddy that I went to South Carolina with tried to get me down to Miami for a bowl game, South Carolina's first bowl game in like 8 or 9 years. And I still to this day regret not just figuring out a way to get to Miami and go to the game, because they won that bowl game. Those are the kind of things you gotta capitalize on when you're in college. Those are the best parts of going to a big time school.